It picked up a couple minutes.
Item 5. Okay. Item 5, consider take possible action regarding employer / member cost sharing of leave cash out assumptions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here we do have some slides. Again, this is a revisit of a deck of slides and a letter that we did back in August 6th, and the meeting was in a little after that, August 13th, I guess. And what this now has to do with is, you know, now that we are going to include the leave cash outs, if we let's use the slides here to certain, I can just go off the cuff here, but let's get a
line. We got to cut the lights.
Everybody can see that.
Dollar Drive, that's good. The lights.
Is it just way down?
She's going to do it.
Oops. Is there any way to kill just these? Yeah, is that all right?
Yeah. No.
Okay. If you dim the lights, you know what happens. They start, you know.
Right.
Went out. So this is a follow-up to the application of the leave cash-out assumptions in developing the member contribution rates for non-PEPRA members. So next slide. It used to be called terminal pay. Cash-outs of accumulated annual vacation leave. It is included in the benefit calculation under the Paulson settlement. Is included in compensation earnable if it's earned and cashed out during the final average measuring periods. Excludes unused leave that could not be cashed out annually. So this is all the constraints. This is only applicable to legacy or non-CalPEPRA plans. This assumption was just changed in the previous item where we changed it for safety tier C. So just to review, after the Paulson settlement, the new assumptions for leave cash outs were added because they are part of final average compensation. There was no change in the 37 Act. And so what ended up happening was that some systems, including Contra Costa, did not include the leave cash out assumption in calculating the basic rates for the members. Now, let's make this even more complicated because the COLA cost is developed under a different section. The COLA costs for the members have always included this assumption because they are much more of a 50-50 kind of split. By the way, that's how all member rates will behave under PEPRA, and that's one reason why this is only a pre-PEPRA issue. So in August of 2014, you made a significant change, and that was to include the leave cash out assumption in the basic rates. Now, in the letter that was presented to you on August 6th, we did lay out the two choices that you have today. There was no action taken, and I think we were pretty exhausted. So now we're coming back just to talk about how to implement that. How they differ is, you know, we using Tier C just as an example, you know, different groups and different tiers have different MOUs and different agreements as to how much leave cash out they could get. And so this is a classic case of if you have a lot of different groups that could possibly get a different benefit, you know, to what extent do you pool that experience and sort of treat them all the same when you're doing the contribution rates, or do you want the contribution rate to kind of track each group more closely? And that's really the difference between A and B. A is going to be sort of the more pooling approach, where basically there are only 6 buckets. And B is going to be the less pooling approach, where there's going to be, is it 12 or 13? 12 buckets.
12.
Okay, so that's a preview of where you're going. Next slide. So option A says that for the leave cash out in the basic and COLA rates, what we would do is, you know, we actually have a different leave cash out assumption for each of your 12 rate groups. You just changed one of them. You saw that in that letter. Just look at it. There was a whole list of about 12 assumptions. So, but if you look at the number of tiers, you know, the tiers is a broader category. I'm going to get my copy of the letter open because I have it annotated, which will help me. Here we go. Thank you. I'm sorry, give me a second here. I've lost my copy here. There it is. So, we'll see this on a slide, but let's walk through it here. The idea is that for each tier, and there are really only 6 tiers, but for each tier, we would basically take the separate assumptions and average them all together and use that as the basis for the cost. The only reason we're proposing that as one of the options is that that is how, for the COLA cost, how that's how it's currently done. That is because we basically set the COLA assumption, we apply that on a combined basis for each tier. Without it being an explicit decision, right now there are only six different leave cash out costs, six different costs across the plan. And we'll see that when we look at option A. Now, so it is consistent with the way the COLA is currently done. That by no means means that you have to keep doing that. In fact, this is a chance to revisit this. So let's go to the next slide. Okay, and option B, we're going to look at a table that shows how these work. Option B, by the way, option B is what we would recommend, and we say recommend with a small r. It's recommend that given where we think, you know, this is because actuarially speaking, these come out the same. But if your intent generally is to have the cost of the member's benefit track reasonably closely what that member is getting, so it's an equity issue. If the idea is to try to make sure people pay for what they're getting as much as possible, then option B is the clear choice here. And on that basis, we believe that that's just based on the conversations we've heard, that generally that's where you're going to want to go. So as it says here, we use the specific leave cash out assumption for each different cost group. We would do this both for the basic rates and for the COLA rates. So in effect, it's a new practice for the basic rates, and for the COLA rates, we would really be depooling. We'd be going from six groups to the full split up of 12 groups. They make none of this changes the employer rate because it all adds up to the same average member cost. The only differences are the cost groups within the tiers. So let's go to, we should have a table coming up here.
Well, Paul.
Yes.
Nick, is maybe an oversimplification. The employer rate is different. If we had one employer, the employer rate wouldn't change. With multiple employers, depending on the option, the employer rate would change.
Depending on if an employer is more focused in a particular cost group, yes. So individual employers will see a change based on, you know, if you've got a high and a low, and you as an employer are right now in the group that has relatively high cash out, you're being undercharged because your members are being charged the average. Whereas what would happen here is actually, since your members, since you're going to be depooling, both the member rate in that group would go up, but then your rate would go up because you're depooled, but then it would go down because the member rate goes up. So the effect on the employer rate could go either way. John, is that more or less correct? Check that
under,
out.
Yeah, mainly under option B, it could go, possibly could go either
way. Could go either way, that's right. Which is that because you're now breaking it into different groups. The employer is affected two ways. The employer is no longer going to be doing the pooling. The members no longer be doing the pooling, and then that will have a reverse effect on the employer. So here again, this is just another description of the same thing. That the let's go to the numbers, John, and start to look how this works. So this is under option A. Now, if I move away from the mic, I don't know if you can still hear me. What you're going to see here, a whole lot of these say 0.26, okay? That's because those are the ones which currently are all in the same tier. Now, just to make this as confusing as possible, you see this 0.26 down here? That's a coincidence, okay? That's not in the same group. But if you look at these four, 1, 2, 3, 4, these are all the same tier. They're all enhanced tier one. Notice this is tier three, right? So here are the four enhanced tier ones. Under the current approach for the employer rates, and under the current approach for the COLA, those are all treated the same. Now we're going to look in a second, and you're going to see that the individual costs, if you did it separately, are quite different. So this is where they're being pooled. So right now, all of the members in these four groups would, in effect, have the same incremental impact of including the terminal pay or the leave cash out in the basic rates. Similarly, for safety, I have 1, 2, 3, 4. It's this one, this one, this one, this one. Oh, look, another total coincidence. This one right here, where's the one that's, this one right here, the first one.
Yeah.
Okay, see that? This is actually a general. It happens to be 0.1, sorry about that, so ignore that one. But this one, this one, this one, and this one, again, are all the same because those are all the same tier. They are all safety enhanced tier A. Under the current, under option A, they would be pooled together. Now, it's hard for us to sort of show both of these at once, but what we're going to do now is we're going to go and look at under option B. We're going to look and see how these four, I'm going to keep in mind, is this one, this one, this one, this one. We're going to see how those are no longer the same. So let's start with a general run and look at those. So now, which one is it? This one and these three. This one and these three. They average to 0.26. But look how different they are. Group three, Central Sand, has a lot more expected cash out, and therefore theirs is actually much higher. But when you take the 0.01 and the 0.5, I love this one, the minus 10, and the minus 7, when you average those together, that's where you get the average of 0.26. So if the idea is to try to have the members and the employers that have different provisions support their own costs, clearly indicates option B as the way to go. So again, just to remember, it's this one and these three. Next time we do this, we're going to have them in color. Same thing for safety. Now, it's not quite as much of a spread for the safety. For the safety, group seven, right there. It's these two and these two, right, John?
Yep.
So 0.03, 0.8, 0.12, oh look, 0.36. So turns out San Ramon Fire District has more generous, a larger opportunity for leave cash out. And so that average of 0.1, which you saw on the earlier slide, is actually an average of 36 points, 12 points, 8 points, and 3 points. Same idea. If the idea is to have both the employer and the members in that employer, in effect, have their contributions reflect their own provisions, you clearly would not want to pool group 11 with the other safety groups, also indicating option B. I can go on further, but I think there the numbers tell the tale. It's just this is a case where if the idea is to have individual equity, a larger degree of individual equity, we think option B is clearly indicated.
Todd, then Jerry.
I move that we go with option B and include leave cash out assumption in basic and COLA member rates with specific assumptions applied for each cost group.
I will second that motion.
Any further discussion?
I just have one question for Paul in terms of the attachment A that is in our materials, attachment A to the August 6th letter, which I know we discussed this on August 6th, but can you remind me, in that letter, fourth paragraph, it says, in addition to the above assumptions, the following five assumptions, actually it says this on page 2 of that attachment, from the above discussions, the last five actuarial assumptions are only used in developing employer basic rate. So it seems to me, based on this attachment, that we're now addressing one of these five items here. Is that correct? So we're kind of checking that one off the list.
Right.
Do we have any plans to address the other four?
We believe you're precluded by statute from including the other four. That is, the under the old rules, under the old before PEPRA, the member basic rates are defined in the statute, and they're based upon a very small number of assumptions. One of those assumptions, though, is future salary increases. And since this is a salary-related assumption, that's why it is enabled, is permitted under the statute. But under the statute, for example, the members for basic benefits do not help fund the disability benefit. And therefore, the disability assumption does not enter into their basic calculation. It does enter into their COLA calculation.
And what I'm seeing here is the members also do not fund the probability of a spouse or domestic partner for continuance?
That's correct.
So the member is not paying for that portion of the cost of their pension?
For the basic, correct.
Okay.
Again, all this is overruled by PEPRA going forward. That's why in PEPRA, that 50-50 normal cost split, it just simplifies all this and says, throw everything that you know about in the valuation, divide by two.
Oh. So sometimes we do make it simpler.
Yeah, much simpler. Yeah,
I just add that also in CERL statute, there's the provision that the employer and the employees can negotiate for the employees to pay up to one half of normal cost. Now, if they did that, then that calculation would include all those assumptions if they negotiated it.
Okay. That's right. Anytime I talk about what's happening under PEPRA, under that provision, the 2018, all that stuff, if that happens, then that simplicity and that clear 50-50 split of PEPRA would then also apply to the legacy tiers. But that's a matter at this point between the employers and the bargaining units.
Ken, it's your place. Any public comment on this item is appropriate at this time.
Hi, Ken Westerman, once again. Taking a look at the, these average member cost rates, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, but specifically to this increase under option B, as we all know, there's pending litigation on what's going on with the terminal pay at the state of California. If this were to pass, you guys are aware that the vast majority of employees do not get any terminal pay whatsoever anymore. The only people that we're really addressing here are those specific management employees who have had the ability to include, their vacation sellouts since 2011, which I believe is when your policy change took place on that issue. So in effect, what this option is doing, and then correct me if I'm wrong, is now all members, regardless of whether or not you receive the benefit or not, are going to see a rate increase. And I know it's very small and insignificant, but to a member who's lost a significant portion of their benefit, this is still adding insult to injury. So I would just ask that you keep that in mind when you're voting, that you're now asking everyone to pay a portion of only a select group of people. So
on that point, if you go back to that's true under both option A and option B.
Right.
Hope we're clear. That injury, as described, was incurred last August when the decision was made to include effective leave cash outs in the basic rate, and that is not for revisit here. In fact, go back, John, go back two slides. You notice here, in under either A or B, the member rates go up.
Correct.
What I find somewhat interesting here is that if the idea is that they're not just that the individual's not getting it, but no one that works in the same building is getting it, that at least is solved when you go to option B, because it does focus it more on at least closer to the individual groups. It's also probably worth noting that under option B, there actually are a couple to go down. It happens to be general, and this happens, again, has to do with the way that sharing, there was so much pooling. Right, under option A, there's so much pooling that when you de-pool, it actually offsets even the fact that you were, basically the pooling saves the members more than the fact that you're adding the assumption would increase. I hope that made a little bit of sense. So, but again, this the yes. What you're I think what you're addressing, speaker's addressing is the decision to include leave cash out in the basic rate in the first place, which was last year's decision.
And on that, I just don't even know that it's even, we're talking about a significant amount of money that's even really should even be an issue. I certainly understand the whole 50-50 cost sharing moving forward with respect to PEPRA, and quite frankly, from a fiscal point of view, that's a smart thing. But with respect to this, I just don't think it's a good idea.
Harvey?
May I ask Ken a question?
Yes.
I want to make sure we're using the same phrase between Siegel and yourself, the words terminal pay. When you say nobody anywhere is getting terminal pay anymore, are you referring to leave cash outs during service or just with the lump sum at termination? Because Siegel's phrase terminal pay, which is why they have an assumption, includes cash outs during the final year of service. And so people still do have that. Legacy employees still do have that.
Well, certain legacy employees still have the leave cash out assumptions, provided they were in a classification prior to January 1st of 2011. And those were specifically, at least in as far as I know, countywide, in management positions. So because they still have the ability to sell back a portion of that vacation annually, let me correct my phrase then. So it's leave cash out assumptions.
But it's because of that the actuary is even making an assumption that there are these increases in these cost groups. that's where these assumptions come from.
I understand.
Paul, please correct me if I'm wrong. The only reason you're making these assumptions Safety's is that there are people down. In these cost groups who get to sell back during their final year.
We had this conversation before.
But I just want to make sure
that... No, I understand that.
Yeah, we're talking about the same.
And the rub for me is that the vast majority of the members do not have that, and their rate is going to increase for those minority that still do have it.
Correct. So you would argue for shaving these groups into even smaller pieces.
For this particular thing, I would argue just leaving it alone. There's no need to change it.
I got a question for Paul.
Thanks.
Every year these management people are getting their leave cash outs. Are they paying employee contributions on it?
Mm-hmm. I believe so, yeah. So
why has it become different when it's terminal pay? Why is it cash out? 2012 they paid, you understand where I'm going?
Yeah.
So I do not get that.
Yeah. What this assumption, this is not the amount of leave that is cashed out routinely all through their careers.
Right.
When we do the experience study, we as best we can, this is not easy to do, but we look at retirees, and we look at the amount of leave cash out that the retirees have, the new retirees, and compare that to the leave cash out that was in their salary all the way along. It tends to be higher. So there is more leave cash out in the final averaging period than there is during their career. Yeah. All that we're capturing here is the spread between those. If it ever gets to the point where the last year is no different from every other year in their career, that will show up in our data, and these will all drop to zero.
That makes sense. Yeah. And eventually that will get to that point because of those.
As people retire.
Yeah, and no longer have it.
Well, the way it's really going to get there is Pepper is going to take over, and then this all goes away.
Yeah.
So now which of those demographic things is going to happen first? The legacy folks, whatever you know, will no longer have an ability to do more leave cash out in their last years than they did in their career. That's event A. Event B is legacy folks are all replaced by Pepper folks, where this is a non-issue. Which of those happens first? Hard to say.
This would be generally every year this person does 2 weeks cash out, 2 weeks cash out.
Yeah.
Last year they decided to go 3 weeks.
Bingo.
There it is. Okay.
And it's the 1 week, right? And that's a great example. It's the 1 week that shows up in this assumption. That's exactly right.
Thank you.
Don?
I just want to highlight what Paul said, that the choice today isn't whether we are going to change or not change. It's the method in which we're changing. The board has already voted, and the majority said we will make a change. I think it was Scott's motion that we'll come back and revisit whether we do A or B. So we are selecting one or the other. And the second point is, I realize the county is the majority employer for our members, but we do have other districts, and it's not all management that can spike. I'm a member of Cost Group 3. I made the motion that raised my personal one the most, because that's what's equitable, because everyone in my agency is able to do to spike. So I just want to make sure you realize there are other employers that have different rules.
I find that word offensive, by the way, Spike.
Yeah.
Unless it's a football, yeah.
An underinflated one?
Yes, an underinflated one.
Or even more.
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments, questions?
Please,
at the podium.
Going back to the original discussion on...
Could you identify yourself?
Yeah, Dan Bornstein. I just had a question for Paul. Going back to the original discussion what would have been added, what would be added in the first discussion we had. On these other items, if we had base pay only, would we ever be having this discussion going forward?
I'm not sure. Maybe I'll ask counsel. I mean, if we had base pay only, then we would not be including leave cash out, or would we?
Leave cash outs are excluded from PEPRA.
From Pepper, yes. So this is a non-Pepper issue.
No, I understand. But going forward, are you not going to have this discussion? If you go away from base pay only, won't you have variances over time that will create the same terminal pay questions?
Absolutely not. Sure. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because what I heard from the arguments is that these, what do they call, the differential pays are not things that only occur in the last year. They are part of the person's comp. This is what I'm not advocating, okay, but that's what I heard.
Yeah.
They're part of the compensation all the way along. That will be completely incorporated in the cost. It'll be pre-funded. There is none of this that attaches
but
to that discussion.
That's not actually what's happened with, say, on-call pay, for example, and other differentials.
That's
where,
a different issue.
Where that actually has, it hasn't been a steady stream. It's been a last year bump up, which would create just
did
the very sort of
mail?
Thing that you had not accounted
yes.
for originally,
when?
Hence creating an unexpected, unfunded liability at the end that you're trying now to improve.
I did not get mine.
That's a statement of opinion.
Well, I'm asking you, if you don't, I mean, don't, doesn't that going to basically only
like me?
Shut down the
this
possibility of this in the future?
That's why.
And not going to base pay only create the possibility that you might have in the future?
Yes or no?
I'm not sure why it's germane to this discussion.
Right.
There you go.
Okay.
All right.
So there's a motion on the floor. Any other comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Motion carries.